Hello and welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, a program which is dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. My name is Mark Amato Pinkham, and I'll be your host for this show. The Guardians of the Holy Grail was created by me to clear up many of the misconceptions regarding the Holy Grail mysteries, Knights Templar, Freemasons, and so forth that are kind of floating around these days. I'm hoping to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar and other initiatic societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. Our Gnostic Knight Templar organization is both a mystical order, and we practice both alchemy and gnosis, and it's also a research organization that's dedicated to finding the truth behind the mysteries of the Knights Templar, the Holy Grail, and the secret societies. If you'd like to know more about us, and I'm hoping that you do, please visit our website at www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, today's show is going to be a little bit different from previous ones. On today's show, we're going to be addressing an important question that has been kind of what you might call the elephant in the living room for certain secret societies, initiatic societies, over the years. The question is, why do many of them not admit women into their organizations? Now, there are certain initiatic societies, such as the Rosicrucians, that have been admitting women for some time now. But there's others that are really still staunchly opposed to doing so. The OMST, the SMOTH, which is one of the big temple organizations in the world, for some times has been admitting some women into their organization, but it still remains principally male and patriarchal. And Freemasonry has created the Eastern Star for women, and it's comprised of women and some men. But still, for the most part, Freemasonry, as you might know, remains pretty much a patriarchal men's club. So anyway, during this show, I'm going to be presenting my case for inducting women into the initiatic societies, and I welcome you calling in and presenting your case, especially if it's contrary to my own. I'm sure that many of you have some strong opinions on this subject, and I myself and others would certainly like to hear them. So feel free to call our toll-free number at any time with your comments and questions, and that number is 888-815-9756. Now, as many of you probably know, I myself am very partial to the admittance of women into initiatic societies because in our organization, the International Order of Gnostic Templars, we try to maintain a balance of the sexes. We have decided from the very beginning that that's very important for our organization, and that's one of the main features that actually separates us from most of the initiatic orders today. So, I'll start by putting it right out there. The question is, why induct women into what have been predominantly male-oriented secret societies? Now, for myself, I would respond first that having a purely male membership in a spiritual group or organization is part of the male patriarchal paradigm that we are now moving away from. This paradigm over many centuries has generated exclusiveness and dominance among the male population and a culture of discrimination where people are more intellectual, self-focused, and normally feel very separate from each other. Now, within the last 20 years, it's become very obvious that this patriarchal paradigm is unbalanced and destructive, And unless we want to destroy ourselves and our planet, we need to revive the female principle in our world. Now, reviving the female principle means getting in touch with our own hearts and our own intuition. It means connecting with and healing the earth, and it also means coming together as a one-world family. Therefore, in view of this, it is my belief that if we perpetuate the exclusivity of our esoteric and spiritual organizations, we will not be keeping up with the evolution of our planet, the evolution that needs to happen right now. Now, another reason I feel we should integrate females into the current initiatic societies is because the female principle was, from the very start, an essential part of their traditions. And the initiatic societies were founded out of the need to guard and perpetuate the Gnostic alchemical path, which is part of the ancient goddess tradition. Now, this Gnostic alchemical path works to evolve a person through alchemical practices that will eventually open them to their intuition and their Gnostic awareness. It opens up certain centers that are associated with Gnostic awareness. Ultimately, this Gnostic alchemical path will give a person direct mystical experience of their unlimited nature as spirit incarnated in a physical body. Now, what has always distinguished the goddess tradition and separates it from the orthodox god tradition is its potential to evolve a person to the highest spiritual awareness and give them deep mystical experience. Now, when they first manifested, the initiatic societies were totally aligned with the goddess tradition, and consequently they could provide their members with a path of alchemy and the potential of unlimited mystical experience and spiritual growth. But as time has passed, these societies became progressively more patriarchal, and their membership became almost exclusively aligned with the patriarchal religion of Christianity. Consequently, the secrets of alchemy and the possibility of mystical experience and spiritual growth in these societies was replaced with intellectualism and rituals that are performed like stage productions that have very little meaning to those going through them. Now, this actually brings up another important point. Unless some changes are made in the near future, and the initiatic societies can once again provide mystic experience and spiritual growth to their members, they are in danger of shrinking and even dying out. Now, this appears to be especially true in Freemasonry, where you find in some lodges the average age is 60 years or older, and you find these lodges are not attracting new members. Freemasonry and other patriarchal organizations like it are having a hard time right now both attracting new members and holding on to the ones they have, because both old and new members are getting disillusioned with what these societies have to offer. Old members of these societies often find that after going through a series of rites and rising through all the various degrees of advancement, there really isn't not much more to achieve, and there isn't much possibility for true mystical experience or spiritual growth. Now, new membership has slowed in these initiatic societies because people today are cultivating the female principle within themselves as part of their evolution, and consequently they desire more than intellectualism or empty ritual. They want deep mystical experience, and they want to be able to progress spiritually to attain a permanent level of expanded awareness. I contend that if these societies become more integrated with women, there will once again be many more opportunities that they can offer for mystical experience and spiritual advancement. Now, as I've said previously, these societies initially were closely affiliated with Gnosis, alchemy, and the goddess tradition. So let me give you a little history regarding them. The initiatic societies were originally formed to protect, guard, and practice the mysteries of alchemy and Gnosis that initially entered Europe from the Middle East. Most of their early Gnostic and alchemical wisdom came to them primarily from the Sufis, which were the mystical adepts of Islam, and the Knights Templar. Both the Sufis and the Knights Templar were both great lovers of the goddess and the goddess tradition. The Sufis, as many of you know, were renowned mystics, and in their time, or during the time of the Templars, they were the greatest alchemists. And they traveled the length and breadth of the whole Muslim empire just to gather esoteric and alchemical teachings and bring them back to the Middle East, translate them into Arabic, put them into their libraries, and they used that information to create synthetic mystery schools that were a combination of Hindu yoga, Egyptian alchemy, Greek philosophy, and Persian alchemy. Many Europeans became students of these, of the Sufis and their Sufi schools, and after studying within these schools, they brought the Sufi alchemical wisdom back to Europe, where they united together with organizations dedicated to this Gnostic alchemical path. The Templars were one of these groups that studied with the Sufis. The Templars are said to have studied with numerous Sufi orders, including the Albana, who are the Sufi Freemasons. And it's from the Albana that the Templars learned alchemy, sacred geometry, and also sacred architecture. Through the Sufis, the Templars also learned the importance of venerating and honoring the female principle. They learned that the Gnostic alchemical tradition had originally come from the goddess. And they learned that the symbol of this tradition, the red rose and the red cross, are ancient symbols of the goddess. Now, when they left the Middle East, the Templars and other European alchemists adopted as their symbol the rose. The Templars left the Holy Land as Knights of the Rose Cross. Other alchemists united in Europe in organizations that adopted the symbol of the rose and the Rose Cross. Collectively, these organizations and the Templars were sub rosa, meaning that they existed under the symbol of the rose, which is the symbol, ancient symbol of the goddess. So they're all united by the rose, and they were all united as branches of the goddess tradition. Now, one of these alchemical sects is familiar to most of you. This is the Rosicrucians, those of the Rose Cross. In order to reveal where they received their alchemical wisdom, you'll find in the legends of the Rosicrucians that their original founder, Christian Rosenkreuz, was an alchemy who studied with the Sufis in Damascus and also in Fez in Morocco. And then he brought back the Sufi wisdom to Europe and founded the Rosicrucians. Now, another line of influence, or another line of goddess influence, if you will, from the Middle East came specifically through the Knights Templar. This was the Gnostic path of the Johannites that the Knights were initiated into in the Holy Land. The Johannite tradition is said to have anciently originated in the Far East and then come west with a Gnostic sect known as the Mandaeans. The Mandaeans merged with a a number of cultures successively, the Persians, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, and finally they merged with the Essenes to produce the sect of the Nazarenes or the Nazarenes, within which was born John the Baptist. He was a Nazarene. And he was also to become the first leader of the Johannite sect in the West. Now, John passed the leadership of the Johannite sect to his primary successor, Jesus, who in turn passed it to his primary successors, John the Apostle and Mary Magdalene. It then passed down a line of grandmasters, all of whom were named John. So they became John number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. Now when the Templars were formed in the 12th century, the Johannite grandmaster was John number 67. He governed the Johannite church from Jerusalem and became friends with the first Templar grandmaster, Hugh de Payens. He took a great liking to Hugh, apparently, because eventually he passed the grandmastership of the Johannite lineage to Hugh de Payens, thus making him John number 68. And from then on, the very ancient Johannite Gnostic tradition became an integral part of the Knight Templar order. So, thus, you can say that there were actually two churches that were founded by the disciples of Jesus. Most all of you are familiar with the church founded by St. Peter, which became the Catholic Church. The other church was founded by John and Mary, and it's known as the Johannite Church. You can say that St. Peter's church was a representative of the patriarchal tradition, and its rites and its ideology was or is very patriarchal, while John and Mary's tradition, the Johannite Church, represented the ancient matriarchal goddess tradition, and it was also representative of the alchemical and Gnostic practices of the goddess tradition. Okay, we have someone on the line right now. We have Dr. Clifford Alford of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, nice to have you on the show. And so what do you think about today's subject?
Well, I think it's an interesting one for sure. There are a lot of forms of Freemasonry, for example, and some Templar organizations that don't have female members or at least equal members. But we have one here in Oklahoma called Co-Freemasonry, and the Co-Freemasons have both women and men functioning equally.
Go ahead.
There are a number of Co-Freemason organizations around the country that I know of, but here Co-Freemasonry is catching up with the rest of Freemasonry to the point that they're about equal in number as far as their organizations and their membership.
Cool. Well, that's very, very encouraging to hear. I wasn't that familiar with that. Well, that's great. That's great that it seems like they're trying to create a balance of male-female through the Eastern Star. Of course, my ultimate hope is that they'll also try to do that through the more traditional Freemasonic lodges, but that's yet to be seen, so we can only hope.
Freemasons are giving them a run for their money.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to have to pay attention to that.
Well, the more of us that invite females into organization, the better, because the other initiatic societies are going to have to look at that, and they're going to have to really look at that question again, why they aren't inducting them into their organizations. So that's a very good thing to hear, and I'm, I appreciate you calling in and mentioning that, Sir Clifford.
All right, thank you. You have a great day, sir.
You too. Take care. Okay, so there are organizations that are trying to integrate more women into their organization and create a balance of male-female. I think that's a sign of what's happening on the planet. According to one belief system, an esoteric belief system, we have gone through different ages on the planet. We've gone through two ages, and now we're moving to the third age, which is a balance and a union of the first two. The first age was the female goddess matriarchal age. That was the Neolithic time period, if you will, when they say God was a woman, when the goddess was everything. Okay? And that's the agrarian time period, the Neolithic time period. And then what you had following that, of course, was the patriarchal age, where men took over the positions of power, and it was the God, the heavenly God, the God the Father, who was the supplier of abundance and took over the place of the goddess. But now they say we're moving into the third era, and this is what makes this so important. We're moving into the era when we can hopefully come to a balance between matriarchy and patriarchy. We can come to the balance between male and female so that they're equal. We can come to a balance within ourselves of male and female and within all our institutions and all the organizations around the planet. There will also be that balance of male and female. And this is considered to be very important for us and our spiritual evolution, because they say that we need to create a balance of male-female within ourselves. We need to get to that point before we're able to go through the transformative evolution that we need to go through right now to rise to a higher level of spiritual awareness, spiritual consciousness. This is alchemy. When you have a balance of male-female within yourself, the male-female principles unite, and that creates the alchemical force that transforms you. You also need a balance of male-female in order to activate both sides of the brain, both hemispheres, left brain, right brain, one being more intellectual, one being more intuitive. When they come together, when they balance, when the intellect balances with the intuition, then you have true gnosis. True gnosis is simply a intellectual idea that arises within a person and is accompanied with this very powerful aha, this intuitive aha. There's no question that this idea is totally right. And it's the intuition that's coming with it that makes that so that you know that this is truly right. So there's many reasons that we have got to come to this balance of male-female on the planet. And right now, the most important reason is for our own spiritual evolution and the evolution of the planet. So getting back to the history, as I was mentioning it, I talked about the alternate church that was founded after Jesus, the Johannite Church, which was founded by John and Mary, the Apostle John and Mary Magdalene, which right now we're finding out were the true successors of Jesus. We're finding this out through the Gnostic Gospels and certain Gnostic texts such as the Pistis Sophia, which says that, Jesus says in that text that when he and the apostles leave, they will be in the paradise, and his two main successors, his two main apostles, John and Mary, will be on either side, right and left sides of him. So, for this reason, it's often said that the true line, the true church that came after Jesus was the Johannic church, because Jesus' true power, his true spiritual power, his true spiritual wisdom was passed down that church. Okay, and it's that power. It's that power that alchemically opens up. That's the alchemical force that's passed down through this lineage. It's passed down from one John to the next. And when the Templars received it, it was passed down from one Templar Grandmaster to the next. And it was also this power that was transmitted into new Templars during their initiations. And it was this power that then initiated the process of alchemical enfoldment within a new Templar. Now, what we know about the Templar initiation ceremonies comes principally from the spies of the French King Philip IV, who infiltrated the Templar preceptories and basically found out what they were told was already happening. King Philip IV apparently infiltrated the preceptories because, more than wanting to arrest the Templars because of their heretical practices, he wanted their money. He wanted their wealth. And by reporting to the Pope about their heretical practices, this was one way of bringing them down so he could take their wealth. So anyway, what the spies of King Philip found is that during a typical Templar initiation, the officiating Templar knight would kiss a new Templar initiate in three different places. He would kiss them at the base of the spine, he'd kiss them below the nail, and he would also kiss them directly on the mouth. Now, to those who understood at the time and those that understand it today, this initiation is a traditional Gnostic alchemical initiation, and different aspects of it are still observed and practiced within some sects of the East. Right? The base of the spine and below the navel are two places traditionally associated with the alchemical force known as Bharaka amongst the Sufis, or Kundalini amongst the Hindu yogis, and the serpent power, or the goddess power, or the Holy Spirit. It's this power that normally lies dormant within all of us, but when it's awakened through initiation, this force does all the work of transforming a person on all levels and ultimately leads them to their own Gnostic awareness. Now, the Templar kiss on the mouth was also a way of awakening this inner power within a new Templar knight. The officiating Templar would transmit his spiritual power into the new initiate through his own breath, and then that power would move into the new initiate and awaken their dormant power. Okay. So I think we're going to take a short break now. And we'll come back within a few minutes, so don't go away.
Tarzan Love, Tarzan Love, BBS Radio, Tarzan Love, BBS. Love, Tarzan Love, BBS.
Attention, an important product from hempusa.org, microplant powder, will change your life by removing all types of positive toxins, such as heavy metals, parasites, bacteria, viruses, and fungus from the digestive tract and stomach wall so you can absorb nutrients. Microplant powder is 89% silica and packed with a negative charge that attracts positive toxins from the blood, organs, spine, and brain. This product has the ability to rebuild cartilage and bone, which allows synovial fluid to return to the joints. Silica is a precursor to calcium, meaning the body turns silica into calcium and is great for the heart. There is no better time than now to have microplant powder on your shelf or in your storage shelter. And with an unlimited shelf life, you can store it anywhere. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. It's a great way to change your life. So call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org today.
The people need an answer right now for you to bring the hemp back to America. Bring the hemp back to America. Bring the hemp back to America. Don't waste our time any longer. The people need an answer right now for you to bring the hemp back to America. Bring the hemp back to America. Bring the hemp back to America. You have no right.
You have no right.
You have no right.
This message is brought to you from HempUSA.org, supplier of fine hemp products, sponsoring the BBS.com radio network, the leader in internet radio. 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 Radio.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate? Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution, if you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economists on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
BBSRadio.com. It's not mainstream. It could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth. BBSRadio.com.
Okay, hello again. We're back again with the Guardians of the Holy Grail. Today we're asking the question, should the initiatic societies admit more women into their organizations. And I have been presenting my case in the affirmative that they should. And up until the break, I was talking about how the initiatic societies were initially very female or goddess oriented, and they taught alchemy and gnosis, which are different components of the goddess tradition. And a lot of their gnosis and alchemy originally came from the Middle East through the Templars and through the Sufis. So we're talking about how it came through the Templars. As you may know, many of the initiatic societies were founded from the Templars, or they received the wisdom of the Templars. It was passed to them. But right now, before we continue on that, we have a caller on the line, David Berkey. Hello, David.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good, good. Nice to hear from you. And so how would you like to contribute to today's discussion?
Well, I'm very, very interested in this subject. It's very important to me. I happen to be a Knight Templar with the Masonic organization in the United States, Freemasons. And as I guess everybody knows, Freemasonry basically is just a very male organization in most of its subordinate bodies and main bodies, the Blue Lodges, etc., and even up into the Scottish Rites and throughout the whole organization, although there are the Eastern Star bodies and other associated bodies to the different subordinate orders that are do have a female part to them. They are female organizations. But the main lodge, the Blue Lodge, the main bodies are all male. And that has always been a concern to me. That's always been an interest to me why that is. And I've done a little bit of looking into it over the years. And my feeling was, I mean, it started out as an all-boys club. And my wife was actually very involved in Templary, in Masonry, as an auxiliary and not allowed in the meetings to see the rites and rituals. One comment she would make is that women aren't likely to want to belong in many cases, but nonetheless, I do believe they have a place and we need to make room for them in the Masonic orders.
Do you find that there are many Freemasons that hold your belief and are also interested in there being more integration?
Well, it's something that's not brought up very often. It's something that's not thought of very often. I have brought it up. I have mentioned it. I have discussed it, and I get the look that no one's really thought much about it. It has not been a big issue on the table, so to speak. I myself intend to make it a little bit more of an issue these days, discussing it. Why is it? It's a very old organization with old roots, with long-standing traditions, and it's a hard tradition to break, to get over.
Well, what does it take to make any major changes within Freemasonry? Obviously, that would be a huge one to admit women. What does it take to make such a change?
Well, it was certainly Freemasonry in the United States and worldwide is a very complex group, very hierarchical, a lot of rules, regulations, a lot of voting bodies. Huge constitutions. It would take a tremendous amount of work to do that. Not something I could see happening overnight, but I think certainly something that needs to be addressed and spoken about, brought up to the brethren, to the brothers of the lodges at a discussion level. And I think you're going to find some discussion will be no, women don't belong here. They never have. They never will. But as we see younger members coming in, I think there's more discussion. It's open for more discussion. I think the first thing to do is it needs to be put on the plate. it needs to be brought up as an issue to be discussed. And it needs to be discussed, why is this important? And I think you're addressing that today in your discussion.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, David, for calling in. And it's definitely wonderful to have a Freemason come in and also respond in the affirmative and support my belief system. So
yeah.
Thanks very much for that, David.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you take care.
Bye.
Okay, we have another caller, Gene from California. Gene, are you there?
Yes, Mark, thanks. I just had a reflection that you might want to comment on or not. Maybe it's obvious. I know you've been talking about really the as above, so below, what goes on in the outer society is going on inside us, and that goal of wholeness to attain whatever it is we call it, the home, the spirit, the grail, that place of wholeness we can't really get to unless we bring the parts of ourselves together. And it just seems to me that fear plays such a huge role, whether we're talking about an outer organization or inside ourselves. The fear of letting in that more feminine place in ourselves, whatever word we want to use, or intuitive place, because of the, it has an element of unpredictability, that place is so much in the spontaneous and so much in the heart and so much in the present moment that it may scare the more mind-oriented places in ourselves or in the outer, because the mind likes to, well, you know, analyze and digest and get a sense of control over the subject or whatever's going on, know how things fit. But when we let that other element in the self up, it doesn't fit neatly. And we may not know what to expect. And so I think it has to do in ourselves and in the outer situations and organizations with really being afraid to open it up because we don't know where it's going to go. And I guess that plays into if we have a higher agenda, then what's the place of surrender to the fullness of the spirit and knowing that that will lead us home as well, even though it may be uncomfortable. So that's all I want to say, Mark. You can talk
well
about
said,
that.
Well said, Gene, yes. I think that, you know, fear is definitely going to be a major obstacle. We're going to, the initiatic societies are going to need to overcome before they are ready to admit more women into their organizations. I mean, it is a long-standing tradition, and I'm sure a lot of them are a bit scared of breaking with that tradition. So thank you for calling. We also have Mary from Nevada calling. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to make two quick comments. And
okay.
One would be, that the reasons to me are obvious that throughout history as to why women have always been excluded in organizations like this, I think that it just boils down to the plain old usual male control. And not to say that all males are this way, but I just think that that's a very obvious bottom baseline reason. But I also wanted to say that women would only add to the goddess tradition in the most obvious way, in that they are women and would best represent the goddess and only add to the proper balance, in my opinion, in these organizations.
Hmm. Very well said, Mary. Thank you very much for calling in. Anything else? No?
That's
okay.
It.
Okay, thank you very much, Mary, for calling in.
All righty, thank you.
Okay, so I'd like to kind of finish up this history that I have been going over, because it does kind of explain the evolution of these initiatic societies and how they became what they are today. I left off talking about the Knights Templar after they brought in many of the Gnostic alchemical practices from the Middle East through the Johannite tradition, through the Sufis. Once they were established in Europe, you'll find that the Templars built octagons, domes, and many of the huge Gothic cathedrals that are still standing today. These were all designed to generate the alchemical force, right? So that you could just enter any of these cathedrals or octagons, and you would be overcome by that force, and that force would then enter you and then initiate that process of alchemical unfoldment. So all these structures are kind of what you might call alchemical crucibles. Now, the Templars had learned the secrets of these alchemical buildings from the Sufi sect known as the Albana, the Sufi Freemasons. One of the buildings that they studied that had been built by the Albana in the Holy Land was the octagonal Dome of the Rock, which the Templars actually spent a lot of time studying because it was just a short walk away from their residence in the Alaska Mosque. Now, the Templars found that the octagonal structure of the Dome of the Rock was designed to unite the polarity and thereby generate the alchemical force. It naturally unites heaven and earth, spirit and matter, the male and female principles, and all other manifestations of the polarity to generate the alchemical force. Now, this is basic alchemy. In order to create the Philosopher's Stone, the Elixir of Immortality, or the power of alchemy, you must find some way of uniting the polarity. Once the Templars had understood the alchemical value of the octagon, they went back into Europe and made many of their European preceptories in that shape. Now, we know that the Templars were principally a male society, but they gave great honor and veneration to the goddess, and they invoked her in their rituals. They placed images of her as the Black Madonna on the main altars of most of their Gothic cathedrals. And they continually call forth the guiding presence of both Mary Magdalene and the Virgin Mary. They also revealed their affiliation to this ancient goddess tradition through their eight-pointed red cross, the Cross Patay, which is an ancient symbol of the goddess in the Middle East. It's also a symbol of alchemy. Now, what happened was that when the Templars disbanded in 1307, their Gnostic and alchemical wisdom was passed to other initiatic organizations, including the Freemasons and Illuminati. The Illuminati actually started as a Gnostic alchemical organization, and later on its agenda changed pretty dramatically, but that's how it began. Now, many of the Templars escaped to Scotland, where King Robert the Bruce created for them the Royal Order of Scotland. Okay, so this became the Templar organization in Scotland. It was a Freemasonic organization and was headquartered at Kilwinning, which is the Mother Grand Lodge of Freemasonry. Now, it was at that time, during the time of the Royal Order, or the beginning of it, that the Templars transmitted their Gnostic alchemical wisdom into Freemasonry. Okay, their wisdom eventually became encoded into the 33 levels of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, as well as you find the 13 levels of the York Rite. Now, it was because of the transference of their Johannite wisdom into Freemasonry that you find that the two patrons of the craft are the Johannite patrons, John the Baptist and John the Apostle, and you also find that the most holy and sacred days of the Masonic year are the holidays of John the Baptist and John the Apostle. You'll also find that the first three degrees of the craft were originally known as the degrees of St. John. So this is when the transference occurred of the Gnostic and alchemical rites and wisdom when it was transferred into Freemasonry. Now, you find in the 1700s that there were certain gatherings of Freemasons where it was actually confirmed. It was plainly stated that, indeed, the Templar esoteric wisdom had been transmitted into Freemasonry, or that Templarism evolved into Freemasonry. One of these gatherings occurred in Paris, and this is a famous one. You had the Chevalier Michael Ramsey, who stood up, and he proclaimed at that time that Freemasonry had come or had evolved from the Crusading Knights. And it's believed that he was referring to the Knights Templar. And perhaps even a more important gathering occurred in 1785 at a very important congress, also in Paris, that was attended by the Freemasonic hierarchy. And this included Saint Germain and Cagliostro and Mesmer, a lot of mystics at that time. And during this gathering, it was publicly stated by one Baron de Gleichen, who was actually like best friends with Saint Germain. He stood up and proclaimed that the Freemasons had indeed evolved from the lineage of Johannite Templars. And he mentioned that this Johannite lineage, the Grand Masters were named John 1, 2, 3, and so forth. So it was plainly stated and acknowledged, and from that point on, that was the belief that certainly that the Templars had become the Freemasons. So since that time, history is clear that the Freemasons began as alchemists and Gnostics and received their wisdom from the Templars. Now, the rites of the Freemasons today are still full of alchemical symbology, even though they're not really practicing alchemists. You'll find that their lodges are still temples designed to generate the alchemical force. There's a balance there, and there's sacred geometrical principles that are incorporated into their lodges. You also find at the center of their lodges are a checkerboard floors with interwoven light and dark squares, which symbolizes the polarity that unites as the alchemical force within the lodges. So get back to this question, what happened to the Freemasons and other initiatic societies to get to where they are today? Well, what happened is that these organizations became progressively more patriarchal and intellectual, and they also became predominantly Christian in their faith. So in time, the female and Gnostic influence of the goddess was basically lost or expunged from these traditions. So the question is, there again, what can be done now to make the initiatic societies more mystical again? Well, I would say, simply stated, they need to reverse their process of evolution and bring the goddess and the female principle back into their temples, their lodges, and back into their rites. Now, they can certainly begin this by admitting women into their organizations now. And I think they'll find when they achieve a balance of males and females, then their temples will be a true balance of the male-female polarity, and they will begin to generate the kind of alchemical force that they were indeed intended to do. Now, of course, the inclusion of women will naturally bring more of the goddess energy into these organizations, and it will also make it easier for the male members of the organizations to develop Gnostic consciousness and to open their hearts. Women naturally gravitate to alchemical rites that help them feel more expanded and open spiritually. So I believe that when they are put into a position where they are given some authority within these organizations, they're probably going to introduce alchemy and Gnosis, or the rites of alchemy and Gnosis, back into these initiatic societies. I've certainly seen that in our own organization, the International Order of Gnostic Templars, where the males, you always find the males love to contemplate and discuss intellectually, whereas the females patiently are waiting for those times when we can have practices or experiences where we can open up more mystically and spiritually and have emotional upliftment and mystical experience. Now, another thing that can be done right now in order to bring back Gnosis and alchemy in the initiatic orders is what we're trying to accomplish through our World Alliance for Planetary Enlightenment, which will really be launched next April when we have the World Congress of Initiatic Societies, which is actually designed to bring back together all of various branches of the initiatic societies. What we hope to do through the World Alliance is to remind these secret societies of their origins as guardians of the Gnostic alchemical path and how they have strayed from that path. And I believe that once they realize that they initially emerged out of the Gnostic alchemical tradition of the goddess, their rituals are going to make a lot more sense than they do now, and they're going to have a lot deeper meaning. And when the initiatic societies can understand the importance of the female principle in relationship to their Gnostic alchemical rites, they're naturally going to be more inclined to accept women into their organizations. So my feeling is that all over the world, as well as within the initiatic societies, you are going to find this balance of the male-female, because it has to happen right now. I mean, we're moving to the third age of a balance of male-female, and there has to be the male-female balance, as I mentioned before. There has to be that now so that the male-female can unite within all of us and then generate this alchemical force that will transform us and then move us to a higher level of spiritual awareness. It will evolve all of humanity to its next level. And also will activate both the right and left hemispheres of the brain so that we can naturally move into Gnosis and that we can achieve what we are here to achieve, which is know thyself. Know ourselves as spirit incarnate in a physical body, that we can move into our birthright. We can achieve our natural innate spiritual powers and spiritual wisdom. That rather than seeing God up there in the heavens in another dimension, another world, we can see God right within our own selves. Okay. So, well, that's all I have to say on that subject today, and I'm certainly hoping that we can see some movement in the direction of more integration of females into the initiatic societies. As I mentioned, we are the International Order of Gnostic Templars, and that has been our goal from the beginning, is to have more integration of male-female and also to revive the Gnostic and alchemical rites of the original Templars. Okay. It's our goal to go back to the very beginning of the Templar organization, when we were Gnostics and we were alchemists and we honor the goddess, and there was much more of a female emphasis in all our rites and traditions. And so if you'd like to know more about us, please visit our website at www.gnostictemplars.org. We're doing a lot right now in order to unite the initiatic societies, to integrate them with male-female balance. And we're doing a lot in order to open ourselves up in our organization through our Gnostic and alchemical rites. And so if you feel attracted to our order, what we're doing, you might want to become an associate member, which you can do online. You might want to order our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course, where you learn the fundamentals of being a Gnostic Templar. And you become a full member. We have ceremonies. We have initiatic ceremonies once or twice a year, usually one in Sedona, maybe one in Scotland, or maybe two in Sedona, one in Scotland. And we'll probably start having a lot more of those, too. So you can become a full member, and you can actually download an application right off of our website. And we're always open to any kind of comments you have about what we're doing. And so feel free to email us at, or email me at info@gnostictemplars.org. So thank you for listening to me today. And next week we'll be back with another edition of The Guardians of the Holy Grail, and take another step in getting to the truth behind the Knight Templar and the Initiatic Societies. So we'll see you next week, and have a great week. Bye for now.